All right, this is Roslyn Wine with Madeline Tauberg. We're on
tape
two, side four. Okay. All right. All right, Elaine, you mentioned about going to the airport with Margaret Truman. Did you talk to her while you were going out there?
No, I was with the politicians who were accompanying her with Lynn County Commissioner John Kane and Mayor David Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
I should say rather cynically that the reason that they sent us out there was just in the event that the plane might crash on takeoff or some such thing.
You were just there to observe.
Just there to be there.
Uh-huh. Okay. Are there any other famous people you can recall meeting around that time?
Well, I covered, I don't know why I'll get into this musical note because it was a very minor note, but I did cover Toscanini's last concert, which happened to be in Pittsburgh. A lot of things always happened in Pittsburgh.
Right here.
And I don't know that so much that it was famous people as it were great events. I was always covering many of the post-war steel strikes and the coal strikes, of which there were many.
Okay.
Covered the birth of quadruplets, which was news in those days.
Quadruple.
And Latrobe.
Oh, I do.
Went up the night they were born and visited them on every birthday for I don't know how many years. We did a story on that. News, writing for news service is not exactly the same as writing for a newspaper. For instance, if Frank Sinatra came to town, we were not interested in it because it really wasn't news per se. I mean, the Pittsburgh paper might write about it. Although, I remember Frank Sinatra did come to town, and I do remember we had a little copy girl who swooned and went down to the theater to see him.
Okay. Let me see. Just to go back on something else, we wanted to check your mother's, your maiden name, is it
Kahn.
Spelling?
K-A-H-N.
K-A-H-N. All right. Just wanted to clear that up. Can you tell us a little bit about your brother, how he chose his profession?
Well, I don't know much about my brother. My brother and I fought and fought, as children do, and it, 17, my brother went into the Marine training program at Penn State, and I was in college at the time. There's 3.5 years difference in our ages, he's younger. And he literally never came home. He was married at 19.
Oh, really?
And as I recall, he was studying to become an aeronautical engineer when he went to Penn State, and for whatever reason switched to psychology when he came back. But he's had a very interesting career since, mm-hmm. because he did his internship at the Jackson Memorial Laboratory in Maine. He was an instructor at Yale. He became an assistant professor at the University of Denver Medical School. Became an associate professor at Ohio University at Athens, and a full professor and head of the School of Clinical Psychology at the University of Arizona in Tucson.
Does he have family?
He has two children. He has been divorced and remarried. His children both have doctorates. His one son is an engineer. His daughter's a city planner.
Oh.
And he has three grandchildren, which are three more than I have.
Oh. Okay. Did your daughters ever attend summer camp?
They did. I can't say that they liked it. In fact, if you would really like to know about my daughters at summer camp,
we have a picture or a letter.
I found this recently, and I didn't know I had it. Dear Mom and Dad, I'm going home with you on visiting day because I keep on getting homesick and want to go home. I've talked to Miss Ida, and she said that I can go home on visiting day if I wanted to. Love and kisses, Meredith. P.S. Brownie, that was her dog that she carried, or her pet stuffed animal. Brownie's okay, but he's homesick too.
Oh, how old was she?
Seven.
Seven.
What camp did she?
That was Camp Louise. And do you know Camp Louise? She went with the Pete children.
Okay. Very popular Pittsburgh camp in those days.
Yes.
I mean, for Pittsburgh people.
Yeah, it was outside of Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as you raised the girls in a small town, where did they go for social life? Did they have life there?
They seemed to have friends,
uh-huh.
and then they went away to school when they were 15.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I think they thoroughly, I know they love Punxsutawney and they love their friends there.
I'm sure they do.
And as I said, when my husband first died, and I indicated that I would not really keep the house in Punxsutawney forever, and Meredith and Melanie right away said, but Mother, these are our roots.
Yeah.
And I said, I know, but my roots are in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. A little hard for
me. But if you would like to come home, you can certainly have this house and everything in it. The only thing is you have to live here and pay for it. And they lost interest immediately.
Very quickly. Did Oscar Light, who was your husband's brother, did he precede him in death?
Yes, he died in a nursing home about, he died about 5 or 6 years before.
Before.
He was younger, though. He was 2 years younger.
Oh. Did he have family here?
No, he never married.
Okay. Can you recall if and how Punxsutawney was affected by the Korean and Vietnam Wars?
No,
where a lot
not
of people,
really. I don't think so. Oh. I don't know. I don't have any impression of great numbers of people going to war. I was affected by the Korean War primarily because we wanted to build a house, and we simply couldn't get materials during the war,
uh-huh.
and that's why we really wound up putting a fortune into an old house.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't last too long, and somehow, I don't know that the Vietnam War had that much, at least not impact on my life.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess the people that I knew were in an age bracket that
different
didn't go to war,
right.
possibly didn't have sons who went either.
The photography in your cookbooks that we've admired, can you tell us a little bit about the photographer?
Well, I think there were a variety of photographers, and I was very fortunate in being able to borrow, shall we say, some excellent work from various news sources. I know that many of the pictures were taken by top news photographers who would send me prints.
Uh-huh.
I think the picture of myself in one of the pictures, in one of the books, was taken by the Washington Post.
Oh, really?
For a story that they did on the cookbook. Cookbooks have had enormous publicity.
Mm-hmm.
The groundhog pictures were often pictures that I borrowed from the Chamber of Commerce, but in turn they were given by news organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And the Punxsutawney Spirit also had taken a number of pictures.
Uh-huh.
And some I commissioned myself.
Okay.
Excuse me for interrupting, but in one of your cookbooks there is a picture of a group of people and then your face seems to shine out. Is that the one done by the Washington Post?
No. The Washington Post was a picture of me holding a groundhog cookie.
No,
I know the one that you mean, and I've always been amused by. No, that's probably a news photographer's picture that I got from the, probably from the Chamber of Commerce or from someone.
Uh-huh.
I've always laughed because many years ago, and the newspaper no longer exists, but there was a newspaper in Philadelphia called the Philadelphia Bulletin. And they used to do great advertising, which showed a picture somewhat similar to that, except people would be reading the paper and would say, everybody but so-and-so reads the Philadelphia Bulletin. And every time I look at that picture, in which I'm the only person in the whole photograph looking the opposite way, I think of the Philadelphia Bulletin and the fact that everybody in Philadelphia reads the Bulletin, but...
And that was taken by Punxsutawney.
Oh, I don't know that it was. No, I have no idea.
You don't know who took that picture of you? That was,
well, it wasn't a picture of me. It was a picture of the people gathered at Gobbler's Knob.
Yeah.
And I suppose I was looking at the photographer rather than at the event.
How far was Gobbler's Knob from the city?
Oh, about 3 or 4 miles.
Uh-huh. Have they fixed that area up?
Yes, they have. In fact, my husband's successor was a building contractor.
Oh.
So there has been a number of built. Not only that, but as...
As
the story has gotten bigger and bigger, they have actually built bleachers and have put in all sorts of electrical outlets for the news media.
Uh-huh. And it's usually really early in the morning, right?
It's at dawn.
Uh-huh.
And they very carefully find out what time dawn is, usually around 7 o'clock in the morning in a chill February day.
Okay. Okay. You mentioned also that you were head of a college trust in Indiana. Can you elaborate and tell us just...
Well, that's a Punxsutawney organization that was in around 1960 or 62, was instrumental in having Indiana establish a branch of IUP in Punxsutawney. And so we have been a group that have promoted that branch and have kind of fought for it ever since.
Is that not the same as Board of Trustees?
No. The Board of Trustees at IUP is different. This is the Punxsutawney
Trust.
My husband, however, was on the Board of Trustees of Indiana University.
Was he?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think those are some of the questions. Madeline, do you have another something else that you wanted to ask?
We wanted to hear more about the people
who love groundhogs
okay. for, because I have never seen that, but they're wonderful. Right?
Well, one day...
Is this for sale anywhere?
Well, it is, but not to you. I
in Pittsburgh?
No, in Punxsutawney. Well,
only
yeah.
in Punxsutawney.
Only
in Punxsutawney.
How far was Punxsy from Pittsburgh?
Approximately 85 miles.
Is it because Clarion was, but I guess you go different
ways. 119 to 2, I mean, yeah, 119. 22 to 119. Okay. There are various ways of going. Mm-hmm. You can shorten it a little bit. But I've forgotten what year. I guess in... Maybe it says what year. The Punxsutawney Spirit changed hands. And the new editors called me, or the new owners, and I had carried on quite a battle for the hospital. It's not a battle that I won, but I did fight it. And as a result, I got a call from the new owners saying that I had a highly developed sense of indignation and would I like to write a general column for the Punxsutawney Spirit, which I did for 8 years, until Bunny, the manager, new manager who came in, suddenly wrote me one day and wanted to reduce my tremendous pay, which I think was $25 a week.
Oh.
And I told him if he couldn't afford $25 a week, but wasn't worth that, I really didn't think it was worth anything. At which point, my husband was ill, and frankly, I didn't really have time to write it anyway. Uh-huh. And it got to be kind of a joke, because when I wanted to write something, I would write it for nothing, which was the price they liked. But during the 7 years, really, that I did write the column, which would have been from about 73 to 1980, a lot of people died. And though it didn't start out to be obituary sketches or even a history of the town, the fact that these people had lived the history of the town and that they were sufficiently interesting that I wrote about them, it really did turn into a history, more or less. So we, the editors and I, put out a book of the columns that stood the test. Now, the columns that made the greatest impact, the columns in which I was able to change the world, or at least change Punxsutawney, are not in this book because they would have no relevance today. They're like the yesterday's news that you throw out with a fish or what have you. But these are the columns that, in a sense, were fillers. But they were the pieces that lived on because they were of some interest
to the people of the
When we walked in today, you were telling us about being interviewed about memories of memoirs about
the groundhog. Well,
please tell us more about that, because that's something that's happening right now.
Well, 2 years after I was married, my husband became president of the world famous Groundhog Club, and it was a period in which, when I first came to Punxsutawney, there was not even a radio station there. Within 52, 53, there was a radio station, and there was TV, and the groundhog became really a true story in a sense that things had to happen. And I was there during that period. The cookbooks came about because I thought it was a good story, and because someone had given me a Charleston Junior League cookbook for a wedding present. And we went back to Charleston, because my husband liked to hunt there around a place called Somerville. And I saw that they had sold 100,000 copies in a year, and I didn't really know that, of course, they had 100,000 visitors a year. Punxsutawney may have had 100 visitors a year. I don't even know they had that many. But nevertheless, I thought that we could make money if we did put out a cookbook using the groundhog as the theme, which would carry it about beyond the boundaries of the town. And it's interesting because a woman named M.F.K. Fisher, who was considered one of the greatest of all writers who happened to write about food, died the other day. And they recalled her books, one of the most famous of which was called How to Cook a Wolf. And, of course, it was a Depression-era cookbook, which said that when the wolf came to the door, you invited him in and you cooked him. But it was a great title, and it kind of inspired me, except that How to Cook a Groundhog was a little bit too literal. People might have been turned off rather than turned on. So out of that evolved Cooking with the Groundhog. And it did get the publicity that I hoped it would, and it is still in print at this point 35 years later. But I had only, although I used the groundhog as the theme, it was a hospital auxiliary project, and committees did work on it, and there were many people who worked on it, including Veronica Volpe, my friend, who was at one time both the food editor of the Post-Gazette and the press. And Veronica had volunteered to edit the book for me, and from her editing, I learned a great deal. I learned enough that when 10 years later I did Cooking with the Gourmets and the Groundhog series all on my own, I was able to do it on my own, without committees and without any outside help. Also, Cy Hungerford, who was a famed Pittsburgh cartoonist for more than 60 years and was a great friend of the Groundhog and of Sam and myself and of the original Dr. Lorenzo, who had been president of the Groundhog Club, agreed to do various cartoons for me to illustrate both books. So we really had a lot of material.
Mm-hmm.
And when I decided to do the second book, I worked for 8 years at Carnegie Library getting all of the Hungerford cartoons going back to 1928 on the Groundhog, which was I was able to kind of spice the book with that. And I had his permission, plus the Post-Gazette's permission, to use them. The book came out in 1958-59. The New York Times in 1960, which there again, you have to be in the right place at the right time, mm-hmm. and you need an enormous amount of luck in addition to all of that. Craig Claiborne had interviewed us regarding the book, I think in November. And then New York Times had a great strike that lasted month after mm-hmm. month. Strike was set, now they worked 6 weeks in advance on the magazine section. So the strike ended the week of Groundhog Day, and Groundhog Day was on Sunday. And the Sunday magazine, the first one that emerged after the strike, had a two-page spread on Cooking with the Groundhog. Now, there was so much luck and fate and what have you involved in that, they don't even want to think about it. And 10 years later, when I sent my own book, to the New York, to Craig Claiborne, who in the meantime had left the New York Times, I assumed that nothing would ever happen. And nothing did until 1 week before Groundhog Day, when one morning at 9 o'clock exactly, a woman called me and said, "This is Jean Hewitt. I'm the food editor of the New York Times. I found this book in my drawer. I find it fascinating. Tell me about it." So I told her about it. I ran out immediately and grabbed a friend's 4 children and had a photographer take a picture with my husband in the cookbook, shipped it off to the New York Times, not knowing why, because they didn't ask for a picture, but I just sent it. And on that Saturday, which was Groundhog Day, there was an 8-column spread in the food section with this picture on the new cookbook. And there again, you know, why was it in the drawer? Why was it left in the drawer? Yeah. Why did she pick it up? I mean, I don't know. But it did happen.
Now, mm-hmm. what is going on now that they came up to interview? About all your cookbooks? Or
No. Incidentally, Bill Murray, who was the star of Saturday Night Live, mm-hmm. a very popular satire show on TV, decided to do a movie called Groundhog Day, inspired, no doubt, by all the publicity about Groundhog Day. And so Punxsutawney, the powers that be, think that if this movie is going to be at all successful, it is going to be seen by 90,000 people. And some of these people, even though the movie has already been filmed in Woodstock, Illinois, although they did all their research in Punxsutawney, and they did get permission from everybody in Punxsutawney, including the Groundhog Club, to use it in the movie, that the success of this movie will drive hundreds of thousands of people or what have you to Punxsutawney. And so they are doing histories, and the editor of the paper, the manager that I talked to before, Bill Anderson, is doing a book on it. And I asked him who I thought the 4 most important people were in relation to the Groundhog Club. And I said, well, of course, there was a man named Clymer Freese, who was a city editor of the early Spirit, who was the man who had the idea when he saw these old-timers eating barbecued groundhog and drinking local beer and eating local corn that the groundhogs had failed to eat. And he christened this group the Groundhog Club, so he gets full credit for all of that. And then Dr. Frank Lorenzo, who was a very active and rather remarkable country doctor, who was the president for umpteen number of years and who was the man connected with it and associated with it and who popularized it and certainly publicized it with his vast number of news people and what have you that he brought to Punxsutawney twice a year for the Groundhog Picnic in August and Groundhog Day in February, primarily not to see a groundhog but to party with him at his country lodge. And then along came my husband, who probably deserved it from longevity also because he not only was president from 1952 until he retired in 1976, saying that while the groundhog conferred whatever it was, he didn't confer longevity on its presidents. He thought it was time to step down. And so he stepped down, but he was president during the time that the inner circle, so-called, began to wear the high silk hats and the familiar tails, and he was the man who really popularized it during the time of television and radio that carried it literally all over the world. So he was identified, it certainly in modern times, more than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, do you know who number four is? And I said, well, I thought it possibly was the manager of the radio station who kind of had worked with Sam on publicity. And he said, no, 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 that's not it. I, it seems, am number four. Because of the cookbooks and the fact that I was in a position to see that a groundhog zoo was erected, and I more or less invented the groundhog cookie cutter, and I raised the funds for the groundhog statue, and I have been more or less as a part of it for a number of years.
I guess something I'm curious about, maybe you've mentioned it, I'm not sure, is the groundhog also eaten?
Or it's eaten by people who like game. I don't know that it's hunted as much as it used to be.
Is it like rabbit?
It's like rabbit or squirrel.
Mm-hmm.
It's also probably better than rabbit or squirrel because it's a very clean eating animal. It is a vegetarian, and it does not eat anything but wonderful herbs and spices and whatever it is that's in the garden. Of course, farmers are not overjoyed with it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you say that you were responsible for having the zoo put into Punxsutawney?
Well, I was on the Punxsutawney Planning and Zoning Commission and was head of it for a number of years. As part of that, I was head, before I became chairman, I was chairman of the architectural committee, which designed the Sarah had charge of the design of the civic complex, which is, was part of our major part of our urban renewal program there. I hired Tasso Casellas in Pittsburgh as the architect, and it's a very interesting building because it contains not only the municipal chambers, but it contains the public, the new public library, and the jail, and at a time it formerly was the magistrate's office. They recently moved out. But in the council chambers. So it was like a five-way, very interesting building, and I talked to the architects. There had been talk for a long time about having a groundhog display of some kind, because when people came to town, obviously the thing they wanted to see was a groundhog, and this was not always feasible. Also, the Groundhog Club wanted to see a groundhog, particularly in February when the groundhogs were hibernating like 3 or 4 or 6 feet under in frozen ground. But it had never really come to anything, so I thought this was the time to do it, and I talked with the architects, and they said, yes, it could be put into the, we decided to do it in the, making it part of the children's library, so that the Civic Center itself is fronted by the town park, and so it was decided to have one window of the Groundhog Zoo into the park and one window into the children's library, which meant that there was always a view outside and inside. It was paid for. The Groundhog Club had acquired some land, which they really couldn't use, so they sold the land to provide for the actual construction cost, which at that time were around $10,000. And my husband and I gave the interior, which was done by the curator of exhibits for the Pittsburgh Zoo. I worked with then head of the Pittsburgh Zoo, Joe Bizinette, and two young people who, when the fight went on with Mayor Flaherty here in Pittsburgh, they went on to the Good Zoo in Morgan in Wheeling, West Virginia. But it was all very professionally
done. So is there
done.
A zoo
now? Oh, yes, it's part of the civic complex.
How many animals are there?
Generally, we have two or three groundhogs
two
in there. And it was done, of course, a lot of the things that they told us about groundhogs, including the curators of the underground zoo, did not apply to our groundhogs. We were told that they would never cross water. And there is a stream of running water running through the little zoo. And so in the front of it was very lovely. It was all planted with rhododendron and what have you. Well, it turned out that our little groundhogs could just swim across like nothing. And they went over and they dug out all the beautiful plants and they went underneath and went and disappeared under the complex. We didn't know where they were, but we finally did get them back. And we had to cement over this lovely garden, and we had to put artificial plants in because they would just chew up anything that was there.
Are they prolific?
No, they're not prolific, at least not for us. We have tried very hard, but if they do, apparently they work at it, but if they do produce little groundhogs, they either die or they eat. They're only, a baby groundhog is only 2 inches long, and they are probably easily frightened. And they probably do not do well in captivity. So we're kind of like the pandas in the Washington Zoo. Right. They don't propagate there, and ours don't propagate either.
Elaine, what was the name of the editor that asked you about the four, do I have this right, the four most important people that you thought, was that
the manager of the Punxsutawney Spirit. He's the man who's putting out the book.
And what is his name?
William Anderson.
Mm-hmm. And he's putting out a book.
Yeah, on the total history of it.
And I need to ask you, Fremer, what is his last name?
Freas. And he was the city editor who invented Groundhog Day.
He started the whole fuss about the groundhogs.
There was a Groundhog Day.
Were there
a
lot of groundhogs?
There still are a lot of groundhogs.
Squirrels,
you see them all over the road. They're all over the world. I read that there are over a billion of them in the world. There's an open season on groundhogs.
Mm-hmm. I don't see many here.
I saw a couple on the
road. Are they different from squirrels? Like if we see squirrels, that wouldn't be.
Well, they're not groundhogs. Squirrels are much smaller. They're little things. Groundhogs are pretty good size. And they kind of look, they're brown, and they're kind of fuzzy, and they kind of look like a frayed dust mop. I think I say in my introduction.
When Joe Bissonette was in charge of the zoo, we had a baby groundhog in the children's zoo. Did he get that from Punxsutawney, do you know?
Well, he could have. Put it like that.
I worked
very
well.
Oh, he was very nice. He was wonderful. They lost a lot when they lost him.
Yes, he went to West Virginia, I believe.
Yeah,
he's still
at the good zoo. And then Penny Thomas, I think her husband, were the curators of the underground zoo. And they were the ones who came up and installed the groundhogs, and they did the fiberglass pine trees and the like that we have there, and they painted the design.
Do the school children there make a...
Oh, yes, they do, and they come, and there are always people at that window. That's why I used the picture with a little nose pressed against it, because that's absolutely what you always see there.
Really?
I mean, keeping finger marks off that those two plate glass windows is a major job in Punxsutawney. The groundhog paw prints from the inside are a mess, and people's paw prints from the outside are a mess.
Do the groundhogs eat fruit as well as vegetables?
They give them bananas. They like that. And we raised them pretty much on a dog food preparation, but we also give them lots of lettuce and carrots and what have you.
What I'd like to ask you about, if I may regress, Sam had a business, I presume, with hunting dogs.
No, that was not a business. That was a hobby.
Would you tell us about that hobby? Because it has to be a fascinating story.
Well, when I first met him, I believe he had 169 dogs. Now, those dogs were not at home, and one of the famous stories is about, because he was really a noted breeder of English setter hunting dogs. They were very world-famous dogs. They were famous all over the world. And there was a woman in Punxsutawney who was asked about his dogs, and she said, I know Sam well. And she said, he's a damn liar. I go past his house all the time. He doesn't have a single dog. Well, he didn't have a single dog at home. His dogs were with dog trainers all over the country. So
not all 169 were together.
They were scattered. He had dogs in the south. He had dogs. His principal dog trainer was in Johnsonburg, Pennsylvania.
And did he sell these dogs, or
he bred them? He did sell some. He would never sell a dog to a foreigner. I don't know why. Those were always gifts. So we got very nice gifts in return. My pearls are from Mr. Suzuki of Suzuki Motors, who came with an interpreter too. We had very interesting experiences, because these people would come and he would say, Sam took him up to see the dogs and all. He loved ice cream, and Japanese love ice cream. And he said, ice cream, Mr. Sam, ice cream. He liked vanilla. He didn't like fancy flavors. And I had him of course, they stayed with us, and I had read somewhere that you never serve a native foods because you can't do it as well, and so on and so forth. So I had gotten filet, and I had gotten all the vegetables so that I could either do sukiyaki or I could do a roast filet, but I didn't cook it. It's all cooked to order until he came. And I asked him what he wanted. Well, in those days, there really weren't any Japanese restaurants in the United States as there are now. And he wanted sukiyaki, so he was very happy with it. We kind of cooked Japanese for a few days. Although I did do a turkey for him so he could have an American meal.
And, he traded these dogs, sold these dogs?
He didn't trade them. No, no, no.
He didn't?
No, I think he did sell some.
So
sold
but mostly,
and gave
I mean, but mostly they were dogs that he hunted with and that his friends mm-hmm. hunted with. He gave President Eisenhower two. Eisenhower, I have all the correspondence and the pictures.
Really?
Yeah, his phone would ring and it would be Eisenhower calling and, you know, to talk about the dogs. And he kept a lot of them at George Humphrey, who was his Treasury Secretary's plantation in the South.
But what did he hunt mainly?
Oh, they were bird dogs. They went for grouse primarily and quail, uh-huh. woodcock.
I see, not local, not deer. Or local
oh, no, he regarded
like
shooting
that.
A deer like shooting a cow. He never touched a deer.
Uh-huh. But he did shoot birds.
Birds, because he could shoot from the hip and mm-hmm. he could shoot them in the eye. And that was it. He didn't mangle his birds. They were perfectly shot.
Did he have any that were taken to a taxidermist and put in your home?
Birds?
Any of the birds in your home?
Oh, no, no, no. We didn't.
No.
No, if we stuffed them, they stuffed them with wild rice.
And ate them.
And ate them, yes. No, we had nothing stuffed except a groundhog on occasion that was necessary.
So did he often give these dogs as gifts? I find this fascinating.
Yeah, he would give dogs as gifts.
To people that were from another country or came over specifically
to get
a dog.
Yeah, they would write for it. He wouldn't take money for it, I think, he said. I've forgotten really. He had some reason why, but I don't remember what it was. But
they heard about his dogs.
Oh, yeah, they were world famous because there's a dog magazine like there is,
uh-huh.
everything in the American field, so his dogs and their winnings and what have you were. But mostly, I mean, he would have a number of dogs that would participate in these. It's like horses where you run them in horse races.
Do you still own any dogs?
No. He had several left when he died, and I had asked him many years before, and he said he wanted his dog trainer to have them.
Oh.
And I gave them to the trainer. Uh-huh. I don't know what the trainer did with them. I have no idea whether...
Yeah.